Lecture 21, Akhenaten, the Heretic Pharaoh.
Welcome back. Remember last time we ended with the 18th dynasty at its peak? We had Amenhotep III, he'd established all kinds of trade agreements, built temples, everything was going fine. And then he took his son as co-regent, the son that he had never mentioned before. I want to talk about that son today. That son turned Egypt upside down. And what we'll see today is that there are three things that you can't fool around with in ancient Egypt. Three basic pillars of Egyptian society. The military, religion, and the role of the pharaoh. And Amenhotep III's son tried to change them all. He's the heretic pharaoh, Akhenaten. But let me review just a little bit. Remember that this son who became king was not supposed to become king. There were six children by the great wife, Queen Ti, and four were daughters, but there was an older brother who could have become king, but he died. And then this one son who was never mentioned, he doesn't appear on any of the official inscriptions, he doesn't have any titles that we know of, he becomes king. Now, as I said, he's going to change everything. But let's put together everything we've learned in the past 20 lectures. Let's just put it together to see just how astounding it is for somebody to try to change the role of the military, religion, the role of the pharaoh. You'll remember that Egypt is the most conservative country in the history of the world. Right? You weren't supposed to change anything. I think part of that conservativeness comes out of the geography. Nothing changes. It doesn't rain. The sun rises every day. It sets every day. The sky is clear. Something about the geography does that. But there's more to it. Remember the art? It was supposed to be for eternity, unchanging. They practically reduced tomb painting to paint by numbers. You put down a grid, you filled it in. They didn't want it to change. Creativity was not a virtue. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So even the art, don't change it. Politically, the pharaoh was always the center of the society. Always. Whenever Egypt ran into trouble, it didn't have a strong pharaoh. Intermediate periods, remember the two intermediate periods? No pharaohs to speak of. Whenever they came out of an intermediate period, it was always a strong pharaoh who united. They always went back to that structure. So you can't change that. Their religion. For 2,000 years, you've got the same gods mentioned. You've got Amun, you've got Re, you've got Osiris. Same gods for 2,000 years. One may become a little more important than the other. You've got the same gods. And then you had this very, very deeply ingrained notion of divine order. Ma'at, as they called it. Right? That's the ancient Jewish word for divine order. And divine order meant status quo. There was an order of things. Egypt was on top, and you don't change it. So you've got this very deeply ingrained conservative mentality. That's what leads up to the most amazing pharaoh in the history of all of Egypt. Now, he was co-regent with his father, perhaps because, remember, his father had dental problems. I've looked at the mummy. There are terrible, terrible abscesses on the gum. The teeth are in bad shape. Amenhotep III may not have been able to function as king in the last years. He may have been in so much pain. So he may have taken this child, who wasn't supposed to be king, but is all that's left now with his brother dead, and made him co-regent so there would be a pharaoh. And it certainly establishes who's going to be the next king. This unmentioned son, his name is Amenhotep IV. He's not Akhenaten yet. He's going to change his name. But he's Amenhotep IV, named after Dad. And he rules for 4 or 5 years with Dad, right, with Amenhotep III. And things are going along okay. And his father dies. He completes his father's monuments, which is what a dutiful son should do, in the traditional style. Right? They're completed. He also takes a wife, Nefertiti, the famous Nefertiti, the beautiful Nefertiti, the the bust, that head of Nefertiti, that's an icon of all of Egypt, that's his wife. Takes Nefertiti, who's a commoner, by the way, kind of like Amenhotep III's wife, right? Queen Tai was a commoner. So far, there's nothing really amazing. Then it all happens. Around year 5 or so, something like that, he changes his name. Now, we all know that a name change is significant. The pharaoh's names were sort of magical almost. They told you their political affiliation, their religious affiliation. Amun is pleased is his name. And he changes his name to Akhenaten. Akhenaten. It is beneficial to the Aten. The Aten, you'll remember, that was your Egyptology trivia quiz from last lecture. What's the name of the boat? The Aten gleams. We saw a hint that this god was becoming important because Queen Tai had a boat named the Aten gleams. And now, her son changes his name to, it's beneficial to the Aten, Akhenaten. Something's going to happen. He also not only changes his name, but he changes the art. He is shown in a way that no pharaoh has ever been shown before. He is shown with an elongated face, wide hips. There's a suggestion of breasts on his statues. It's almost as if he's deformed. You know, there are colossal statues of him. Big statues. I mean, really big. You know, probably 18 feet high. Statues of him in the Egyptian Museum in Cairo. And I'm always interested in, you know, because there are a lot of tourists go to the Egyptian Museum in Cairo and don't know much about Egypt. It's a trip. They want to see things. And I always love to hear what the kids say when they go to the section that has the statues of Akhenaten. They almost all look at him and just say, what's the matter with him? It's like they know immediately something is wrong. Now, the pharaoh, of course, had always been shown as well-muscled, vigorous. For some reason, he's being shown, allowing himself to being shown, even directing sculptors to show him this way, as deformed. Rather curious. Now, he doesn't just change the art. He changes the religion. Right? He's changing the religion. He says, there is only one God, the Aten. Now, imagine how revolutionary this is. It's not just that Egypt is conservative, that's a biggie. But every country in the world is polytheistic. Many gods. Moses is way off in the future. This is the first monotheism in history. And he says it in the most conservative country in the ancient world, whose society is built around temples and priests and gods. And he comes in and says, there's only one God, the Aten. Certainly must have shaken things up. You wonder what people actually said. And you know, we don't know. Because the ordinary guy in the street didn't leave records. He wasn't allowed to carve on temple walls. He didn't have papyri, which was expensive, and scribes to write for him. We really don't know exactly what they said. But we do know he tried to change virtually everything. He builds temples at Karnak, right? The traditional place. But they're strange temples. They're not the traditional Egyptian temple. You know, Egyptian temples are usually massive, enclosed places. Eventually, first you may start with a big pylon, a wall that you go through. You know, it's the entrance wall. It's like two walls, and you walk through between these things, huge pylons. And the purpose of this doorway wall is to give the pharaoh a large surface to carve his great deeds. But then as you go into the temple, it gets smaller and smaller. It's a very spiritual experience to go into an Egyptian temple. As you go further into a temple, the floor comes higher. It's a ramp. It goes up and up and up. And the ceiling gets lower. So as you go deeper back into the temple, you get the feeling you're going into a sacred enclosure, more and more sacred space. And in the back was the Holy of Holies, where the statue of the god was. Well, Akhenaten's temples aren't like that. He built a temple called the Gempa Aten. Gem means to find. Pa is sort of like that, and Aten. It means the Aten is found. But his temples that he built at Karnak are open to the sun. They're basically pillars, pretty much. A new concept. Well, the Aten gleams. It's a solar god. Maybe have it open to the sun. Very, very strange. And remember that pharaohs celebrated this festival after 30 years, the Hebsed festival? Well, on one of his temples, Akhenaten shows himself celebrating the Hebsed festival. Now, he hasn't been ruling for 30 years yet, but it doesn't stop him. He wants to have a Hebsed. He has one. But the scenes on this temple are not a traditional Hebsed. During this festival of rejuvenation, where the pharaoh is going to wrestle with younger men and shoot arrows and show that he's vigorous and be revigorated, they brought the gods from all over the land. Statues of the gods would come from all over Egypt to the temple to participate in the pharaoh's Hebsed, so he could be rejuvenated. But Akhenaten said he's a monotheist. There's only one god. If you look on the temple that he's built, you will see all the shrines where the gods should be. It's just Akhenaten. Endless representations of Akhenaten. He's the only one shown. I mean, you almost wonder, did they really have this festival, or is it just painted on the walls? Now, let me say something about these temples that Akhenaten built in Thebes at Karnak. At some point, well after he was dead, those temples were dismantled. They were torn down, block by block. Now, of course, they're stone. And those blocks were used as filler in later temple walls. And in this century, when those later temple walls were being restored and had to be dismantled, the blocks were discovered. Right? And I'm talking about 45,000 stones, each about, oh, maybe 2.5 feet across. They're big enough that two men handle it with difficulty, just about. These are big stones. 45,000 of them. Now, what do you do with them? It would be nice to see what the temple looked like, right? They weren't taken down in order. It would be nice to reconstruct the temple. You know, 45,000 stones is too many. You can't reconstruct the temple that way. But there was a project called the Akhenaten Temple Project, started in the 1950s. Where there's an attempt to reconstruct the temple on paper. What they did, and it's a wonderful project, and this is in the early days of computers. You know, no PCs, big computers. What they did was they took each block, 45,000 of them, and photographed each one to scale. Then you enter into the computer what's on that block. Right? So you've got maybe block number 1,722 is a pharaoh facing right, cut off at the shoulders. Block number 6,008 may have just 2 feet with sandals. Right? And you enter all of these data into the computer. So the computer now has a list of, say, 45,000 blocks of what's on each block, and you've got photos of each block. Now you try matches. You take the block with the pharaoh facing right up to the shoulders, and you say, which of the 45,000 blocks could be a match? Tell me the blocks that have shoulder down to waist, or figure out the proportion, and you ask the computer for the possible matches, and it gives you the numbers. Well, possibly block 11,002, possibly block, and you get out the photos of those blocks, and you see if they match. And it took years. But on paper, much of the temple was reconstructed. Right? Several temples, actually. And we get a picture of what was going on. Just a little picture, but something. I mean, first of all, these temples were open to the sun. And one of the things that's really interesting is his queen, the beautiful Nefertiti, had her own temple. And on her temple, only she and her daughters are shown. It was like a woman's lib temple. It was just for the woman. And Nefertiti is sort of shown making offerings to the god, the Aten, which normally the pharaoh would do. So again, we have an example in Egypt of women being much more powerful than any place in the Old Kingdom. You know, any place in ancient world. In the Old Kingdom, a queen would never have such power. Now, it's the New Kingdom. It's woman's rights. So Nefertiti is really a strong force too. Now, Thebes is really buzzing by now. I mean, what is going on with the pharaoh? Think about it if you were a priest of Amun. You're out of business. Monotheism. There is but one God, and that's the Aten. It's wild times. Really wild. Not only in Thebes, but think about all the temples up and down the Nile. Temples to the god Ptah, temples to Sekhmet, temples to Osiris, temples to so-and-so. Every one of them is out of business. There is no god. Now, the pharaoh, of course, was the one who really supported temples by when you came back from war, you gave the donations, you did that. These temples are going to have to close, shut down. That is one of the pillars, of course, of Egyptian society, the temples. And Akhenaten is changing it, right? I mean, it used to be, the idea was you marched out with the blessing of the god, you were victorious, you came back and rewarded the god because he made you victorious, the temples became wealthier, they would give you their blessings. It was a kind of cycle. But now you don't have the blessings of the gods. The most you have is the Aten. People could not have been happy. I mean, just think about our times, you know, how difficult it is for old people to change anything. What about the old people? You know, you've been worshipping Ptah for 30 years. Now they say, no, Ptah doesn't exist. It's Aten. You really don't just switch. You don't. He was tearing the fabric of Egyptian society. So then comes the next big change. He may have been forced to make it. He moved. He moved from Thebes, the religious capital of Egypt, to a place that today is called Tell El Amarna. He builds a holy city in the desert. He moves the capital of Egypt about 200 miles north to a barren stretch of desert. You know, it's not unlike Brigham Young leading the Mormons to Utah, to a barren stretch. And this is going to be holy land. Now, among Egyptologists, we talk an awful lot about Akhenaten. He's the big hot topic. You know, what do you think really happened? How did this go? I think he probably was forced out of Thebes. It may be that even though he's pharaoh, he's so powerful, the priesthood's got so much money, so much power, so much land, and this was such an unpopular decision that he may have been forced to pack up and move. And he moves. 200 miles to the middle of nowhere. Isolated spot. Now, why pick a super isolated spot? I think one of the reasons is there were no gods there. There were no temples. There was nothing. And you wonder, how many people moved with him? You know? What were the people that moved with him? I tend to think of it almost like the communes of the 1960s. These were the people, if you were going to move with him, these were the people, I think, who were kind of not really fully integrated into society, looking for a better life, not really happy. That's probably the people who moved with him. Sure, he had some money. He was the pharaoh. I mean, there must have been also a group of religious believers. But, you know, the best way you can describe this move, it was a cult. It was a cult. But think of it. The cult leader was the pharaoh, the king of Egypt. So there must have been people who said, wow, we're on the new train. This is going to be it. So these people move to this new city. Now, it's not built yet. They are literally, we have records. They're camping out in tents as the city is being built. Right? As the city is being built. And Akhenaten calls his new city Achet Aten. It's two words. You're familiar with the Aten already. That's the solar disk. Achet is the word for horizon. It's the horizon of the Aten. And when he gets there, they erect boundary stela. These are stela, are round top stones that we've been talking about that are carved to mark the delineation of a city. He marks the city out. Right? This is boundary markers. And the boundary stela tell us a great deal. Great deal. At one of the boundary stelas, he kind of holds what I call a sermon, his Sermon on the Mount. He gathers around the followers and he tells them the Aten showed him this site, the Aten. Now, how did it show on the site? And I'll tell you a strange thing that happened to me. He says it appeared to him and showed him the site. That's what he says. When I was at Achet Aten, the modern Tel El Amarna, when I was there, about, it must be 5 years ago now, I was in this small hotel. It's not a tourist area. There's not much to see, and it's difficult to get there because there are fundamentalists in the area. I was in this little hotel. I got up about, I don't know, 5, 6 in the morning. And I looked out my window, and I just said, whoa. The hieroglyph for horizon, Achet, is a notch in the mountain with the sun coming over it. And out my window was a big notch in the mountain with the sun coming right over it. I mean, I have no doubt that that is what Akhenaten saw. I mean, when he says the Aten showed him where to build, that's what he saw. So there's a bit of a religious vision that he talks about. But he also says interesting things in the Sermon on the Mount, and it's carved on the boundary stela. He says, there can be no image fashioned of the Aten. In other words, there can be no statues. No statues. This is an abstract god. Another change, right? And he says, I, as Pharaoh, will never leave the city. This is the holy city, and I will never leave it. Now, think about what that does to society. He's the Pharaoh who's supposed to lead the military. He's supposed to march out. He's supposed to do this. No more military. Changes the third pillar of society. You're not going to have an army led by a Pharaoh anymore. He's changing absolutely everything. And he says, only I know the Aten. It's an amazing thing. He builds his city. There must have been construction workers coming from Thebes. You know, jobs are good. We got building, you know, it's building boom. And the city is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, it was different. It was art. Artists were free. You know, he's showing things that are totally new now. I mean, for example, he's shown as deformed, right? He was shown as kind of deformed. His daughters, and he has six daughters, are all depicted as having very elongated heads, almost hydrocephalic. Now, we don't know. Was the whole family deformed? Was this an art style? That's a debate. But everybody is shown, and sometimes Nefertiti, the beautiful Nefertiti, is shown almost like Akhenaten on some carvings on temple walls. She looks like Akhenaten. You almost can't tell the difference. Right? So big things are happening. But he builds this city in the desert. It was beautiful. The pavement was painted with birds flying out of rushes. Artists were free. It was no longer paint by numbers. It was, hey, guys, go to it. And it was amazing. There were nobles' houses. There was a northern and southern suburb. Right? There were suburbs. It was a big city. There were temples open to the sun. It was an entire city built at one time to the glory of one God. The tombs of the nobles are kind of interesting. They give you a clue, right, to something going on. First of all, they're on the east bank, right? On the east bank. Usually they're on the west, associated with dead. But there are no cliffs on the west bank, so they buried them on the east. But maybe it's not important. They're not Osiris worshippers anymore. You're not going to Osiris. None were ever completed. None of the nobles' tombs are completed. We're not sure what happened. We're not even sure if there was a belief in an afterlife during this period. He never talks about the next world. I mean, he's really changing everything. When he died, he was buried in what's called the royal tomb, an isolated tomb miles away from the city in a wadi, a valley, a depression. And it looks a little like the Valley of the Kings. It's quite interesting. It looks like the Valley of the Kings. But in this city, he ruled for 17 years. Right? They lived actually at the holy city, Achet Aten, for about a dozen years. And in this city, monotheism began. Akhenaten was a religious leader. He wasn't the Pharaoh of Egypt anymore. You know, it was like his job was to be the religious leader. And when it came to politics and everything else, it went by the boards. He wrote the prayers. He wrote himself the actual prayers that were recited in the temples. And you know, if you read them, they're very impressive. This is powerful poetry. This is not religious texts that are cranked out. Let me give you a little part. I wish I had a Charlton Heston voice, you know, because this is really great stuff. But just a part of it. There's a long poem he wrote called The Hymn to the Aten. The Hymn to the Aten. And it says, remember, this is the solar disk. When you fill the two lands with your love, august God who fashioned himself, who made every land, created what is in it, all peoples, all herds, and flocks, all trees that grow from soil, they live when you dawn for them. Now, there's an interesting message here. He's the God of everyone. He's the God of the Syrians. He's the God of the Palestinians. He's the God of the Nubians. He's the God of everybody. Interesting. It changes divine order. Egypt is no longer special, in a sense. The Aten shines on everyone. And he says, when you dawn, their eyes observe you. As your rays light the whole earth, every heart acclaims your sight. When you are risen in their Lord, as their Lord, when you set in the sky's western light land, they lie down as if to die. So everything moves with the sun. And when he goes down, that's it. And then we have a little bit of elitism at the end. Akhenaten says, I am your son who serves you, who exalts your name, your power, your strength are firm in my heart. Only Akhenaten really knows the Aten. It must have been a very confusing time for the Egyptians. Not just this monotheism thing, but it's a different kind of God. It's a different kind of God. It's a God who's abstract. They never had an abstract God. They had gods that you could crank out in statues. You could sculpt a statue of Isis suckling the infant Horus. You could have a statue of Osiris. This is the rays of the sun? That's the God? It was amazing. Now, another thing about the art, it's not just the way Akhenaten's presented, not just the way his kids are presented, his wife. He is shown in everyday life with his kids. There are wonderful paintings of him. With, he's got two little daughters on his lap, and one kid is eating, you know, or you got a picture of one kid eating a duck, a sticky duck. She's got, you know, sticky fingers, and she's eating this duck. These are scenes that never, never appeared before in Egypt. He was, in a sense, a family man, you know, sort of showing family values. Egyptians never saw anything like this. But we know something tragic happens. Tragic. Egypt is being ignored. He's out in the middle of the desert, this religious mystic, but he's not running the country. The military isn't going out. We're not sure exactly what's happening in the country. We do know that there's diplomatic correspondence. We have records of foreign diplomats, Akhenaten's diplomats, writing back to him. We have the correspondence found at Tell El Amarna, at Akhetaten. And you know what it says? We're not respected anymore. Send the army. No response. Another letter comes maybe a year later. They're attacking my house. Send the army. I mean, one guy, Ribadi, sent about 10 letters. Said, I'm like a bird in a net. I'm caught. Save me. Why don't you answer my letters? Akhenaten didn't seem to care about the physical world. He was the high priest of this new religion, and Egypt was going downhill. It was an amazing time. Eventually, he dies in the 17th year of his reign. We don't have a record of his death. It simply stops at year 17. You wonder, what are the people going to do? Are they going to, I mean, their religious leader is dead. Do they follow the old religion? Do they follow the new religion? What are you going to do? There must have been quite a bit of debate about this. But let me say this. There's a real legacy of Akhenaten. He was really preaching a religion of love. But in a sense, he was a kind of flower child. You know, he wanted everybody to be happy, love everybody. But it didn't quite work that way. It didn't. But there's a real legacy. It's the first monotheism in the history of the world. And you know, a great Egyptologist, James Henry Breasted, called him the first individual in the history of the world, meaning it's the first time that we really can see we have a name of an individual whose ideas changed the world, really changed it. He was a religious visionary. Some people kind of view him as a loser. I mean, the great excavator, Donald Redford, who spent his life excavating the monuments of Akhenaten, views him as a lazy guy. He says, if we characterize his reign, it's characterized by sloth. Some people view him as just as kind of crazy. But I think also he was certainly a religious visionary. And these are real legacies that he's left us. But you know, he's left one more legacy, probably the most famous. His son, Tutankhamun. We'll talk about him next time.